Hello, everyone. This is Eugene Starks, NAHU president. Welcome to The Jump Off, where we take a big leap into everything leadership and NAHU.
Before we jump off in today's podcast, we have a very important announcement to make. NAHU will be hosting the Pharmaceutical Facts, Policy, and Market Today certification at the Benefits Pro Broker Expo on May 23rd in Austin, Texas. Join presenter David Mordo, compliance specialist at Benefit Mall, and moderator David Smith, senior vice president of Eben, for this NAHU course developed to educate, explain, and discuss the many parts of prescription drugs and their impact on America's healthcare and health benefits. David will explore the interaction between all of these stakeholders, the clinical and economic positives, obstacles that affect those that profit, and those that rely on prescription drugs. By attending, you will gain a foundation of the industry, the role of prescription drugs as means of providing medical treatment, the payment of those benefits, and predictions for the future. This course has been filed for 3 continuing education credits in all 50 states. In addition to receiving member pricing on our in-person course offering, as an NAHU member, you can receive 15% off the Benefits Pro Broker Expo registration with the discount code NAHU15. For more information and to register, please visit www.event.benefitspro.com/BPRO Broker Expo.
Hey, everybody, this is Eugene Starks, NAHU president, and I'm here with Kevin Troche and Emma Fox doing another Jump Off podcast. And so excited to have both of you here today. My co-host, Emma, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And if you don't mention it pretty soon, I'll go ahead and say we're right here in the Capitol at Capitol Conference. So we actually get to do this in person today, which is extra exciting.
Yeah, it is. A lot more fun doing it in person than it is over the TV screens, the cameras, or whatever you call those computers. And so we've got Kevin Troche with us. And, you know, I'm thinking Kevin is probably one of the best known members of NAHU because he has done so much over such a long time. I'm just going to cite a couple of things. You know, one of the toughest challenges I know, because I served on the board, is you served as a membership chair. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that a little bit more, but I know you had a lot of reengineering as part of your strategy for membership. You serve now as the vice chair of DEI.
Right.
And you were very gracious and willing to help me when I approached you about helping us do research on whether or not NAHU needs to go through a rebranding and a name change. Mm-hmm. And you took on that task. And at the board meeting yesterday, the board approved, based on all the research you and your team did, approved that we need to move forward with a name change and a rebranding. So we want to touch on some of all that while we're here today. So just tell me, Kevin, I mean, I see you everywhere doing all this stuff around at you, but you've got a regular job too, don't you? So how do you pay for all of this engagement with NAHU?
Well, I'm the founding partner and coach of a consulting and marketing firm called Q4 Intelligence. It is so focused on and ties in so closely to NAHU, it's easy to step out of one and into the other. But for those who may not be aware of what Q4I is all about, we work with independent agencies. We have 2 divisions. One's a coaching, and it's really all about business development. We work on anything and everything that has to do with the healthy growth of primarily the independent agencies, whether it's marketing, whether it's sales, whether it's service, whether it's leadership. But it's to put these owners and these agencies in a position to take control of their own destination, to control their growth, to grow in a healthy way. And with all the complexities that are going on in the industry, with the business world in general, with the pandemic, there's real challenges there. Yeah. So it's an honor that we get to step in and participate on their journey.
Now, before you got into Q4I, you were actually in insurance sales, right?
I was. So as we sit here, we're just celebrating our 13th anniversary as Q4I. Spent 17 years before that on the other side of what I just described, an independent agency in St. Louis. So I've been a producer, I've been an account executive, I've been a sales leader, I've owned an agency and ran it for the last 4 years that I was there. So I've absolutely sat in all the seats.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know as a producer and co-owner in my company, and, you know, as brilliant as I am, my job is sales. And so I know of all the challenges that come our way and how we can easily be diverted from focusing on what's important. And just full disclosure here, I came to Kevin this year, or maybe you came to me, but I thought it was important to be engaged with Q4I this year for me because I knew I would have all these distractions. Mm-hmm. And it helps to have a cohort of people who are helping me stay focused on what's most important, because bottom line, I can't afford to do this if I don't produce in my business.
And that's such a key point of what Q4I is about. We're not about just bringing one bright and shiny idea after another. In fact, probably lean the other direction. I tell agencies that are engaging with us, we may never tell you an idea or suggest something that you haven't done before that you're not already aware of. Our job, as much as anything, is to get all the noise out of the way that we tend to put, allow it to cloud our focus and to just focus on those basics. I mean, I think where this industry is right now, where business is right now, focusing on the basics and putting systems and processes in place to replicate the things that we already know work, that's primarily what it's about. But the personalities that make salespeople successful at selling makes us prone to chasing the next bright and shiny. It's hard to stay grounded and focused. We get bored of doing the same thing, even though when you're sitting in front of a prospect, they're seeing it for the first time.
Yeah.
So when you have that conversation that works, that continuity is key.
Yeah, when you say that, there's a couple of thoughts that come to mind. One, have you seen the commercial where the guy runs into this planning meeting of it's clearly the sales team, and he says, I just got this unsolicited email with the newest, brightest thing. Let's all go do that.
Yeah.
And, totally exactly what you said. It's so many fancy new things coming around. It's so easy to chase squirrels, as I like to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what you're describing, and, one more on that point, you got to love Nick Saban, because Nick Saban says, we don't practice till we get it right. We practice till we can't get it wrong. And I think that's a lot of what Q4I is about, to really help those who are engaged, learn the discipline and practice the discipline.
Well, thank you. And when salespeople hear this idea of following a process, a sales process, a lot of times they'll push back against it. They'll say, I've been doing this 20 years. I've been doing it 25 years. I know my stuff. I'm better off when I'm just natural and not overly prepared. And I don't buy into that. We do need a process to follow for our own benefit. But what I always point out is the decisions that this industry is asking employers to make are some of the most complicated, complex decisions that they make. And stop thinking of it as purely a sales process and think of it as a buying process, that you're delivering a process that makes the buying decisions easier. Taking these big, complex, complicated decisions that impact every aspect of their business and bringing it down into small pieces so they can be comfortable moving forward and, making these otherwise difficult decisions that they abandon.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't guide them through that process, it may go down in your column as a client you didn't get. Mm-hmm. But in reality, what we've done is we've failed to lead them on a path that they can feel comfortable going down.
Yeah, and so the other division that we have is marketing division, and I bring that up now because that education of the buyer has to start before you ever meet with them face-to-face. I mean, Emma, e-powered some of the decisions and the solutions and strategies that you guys take to employers. It takes a lot of education to get them comfortable with these ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't bake that into your marketing, into what you're talking about on social media, into blogs, into your website, to help them start to understand that these problems, they may not even really appreciate the complexity and the impact of the problem they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You have to start educating them around those problems and then start to explain one small solution at a time so that when you are sitting across from them in the sales conversation, they're already been educated, they're already working their way to a comfort level with something that otherwise just sounds too good to be true.
Right.
I love that you said that because I don't hear very many people talk about educating on the problem. I hear a lot of people in sales and marketing talk about the solution, what they can bring, but we always start conversations with, and sometimes prospects will even get frustrated with us because we spend a lot of time talking about the problem. But if they don't understand the problem, they don't understand the solution either. So I love that you said that.
Well, and thank you. To me, it's just one of those core tenets that I think very few people want to learn about your product or your solution until they understand they have a problem that makes that product or solution necessary.
Absolutely.
And that's just the key is then all of a sudden when they recognize the problem, when they understand the problem, Now they take ownership of that problem, and they're much more, now when you bring the solution in, it seems much more valuable, it's much more compelling, because they know that you're not presenting it as just something to sell, you're presenting it
correct
to solve a problem that's harming their business.
Yeah.
That's it, exactly. Now, I love this conversation. I want to get into some NAHU conversation too, but it so applies. First of all, I appreciate you being here and sharing all that, because as we do these podcasts, we want our membership to understand the diversity of our membership, and that we're all not just agents. We're not all just carrier reps or something. We are such a diverse group of people mm-hmm. who all have a passion around helping employers solve this very complex problem mm-hmm. of specifically health plans, health plan costs, accessible, affordable. That's a tough one. Mm-hmm. But we're making progress with really a new model of how we deliver that. But then, that expands to the HR complexities, the hiring complexities. As we look around the membership, we've got resources in our members that can help each other. Emma helps me and I help her, quite frankly, sure. on some of our clients mm-hmm. that we share.
Yep.
And we just both bring some different resources to help solve the problem. So I appreciate you taking time to share that, because one of the things I want people to understand about NAHU is the resources within the membership mm-hmm. and the answers you need are all around us. Being at Capital Conference like we are here today, while we're going to be focused on legislative, all the side conversations, we're solving problems. We're mm-hmm. getting ideas and solving problems.
Absolutely.
So what you do in your job, I've seen you apply that in all of your work with NAHU. So you've done a myriad of things, but most recently you served as the membership chair.
I did. Two years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago. And tell a little bit about that, because it's been really tough in this changing market for us to grow membership. And I think between you and David Smith and now Ashley, y'all basically did some re-engineering.
Yeah, and it was re-engineering, but it goes back to what I talked about before. And when I was the membership chair, it was all about just focus on the basics. I introduced a campaign of just ask one. Throughout the year, we're just like, today is the day. All I want you to do is go out and ask somebody who is a non-member to join.
Right.
I'm not suggesting you ask until you get a yes, but we've got to build this habit. You've got to build this routine of going out and asking. And to the problem issue, I felt that the most logical way to encourage or to get somebody that's a non-member to consider joining is to ask them, what is the biggest challenge that you face in your professional career right now that if you found an answer to it, there'd be unbelievable value for it? And I start with that because you look at this amazing association that we're part of and the resources that we have, but also just the people that make it up. I mean, it actually makes me just a little warm inside as you just think about what we do for one another. Because when you ask that question, what is the one challenge you face? There's an answer in NAHU.
Right.
It's either in a formal program, it's in a resource, or it's an introduction to somebody who has gone through that challenge before and is more than willing to sit down and share that experience and that growth. And to me, that's the core of what membership is about. That Just Ask One, it also came out of a frustration. The list of what I love about this association is unbelievably long. The frustrations are short, but they're real.
Yeah.
And the frustration that I have is, as a volunteer organization, people raise their hand, and I understand sometimes people aren't volunteers, they're voluntold. I love that term.
Yeah.
But still, you accept. And to me, when you accept, it comes with the responsibility to make whatever you accepted a priority. And I never expect it to be the priority. As we talked about, you have a day job, but you have to give a little bit of time because it's an important role that you fill. And I expect anybody that sits in a volunteer position to give some time, some attention to execute on it. And I get so frustrated. I watch people come into these chair positions and, it's 3 months before they ever figure out what their job is, what that role is. And so I think that's one thing we have to do, is to prepare people for success, to let them have quick wins in their committee position. And that was the idea behind the Just Ask One. Everybody can have success doing that.
Right. Well, and I think we all get distracted in our role to build our pipeline and that kind of stuff. And that Just Ask One, I mean, when I get off track, it's like I've got to stop and just do that one thing, get that one victory, mm-hmm. make that call to that agent that's looking for TPA services, or make a call to a client that's, you know, is facing challenges, or a prospective client. So it's just that one thing. When you do that one thing, then it allows you to do the next thing.
Well, it does, because you have momentum. You've had a win. Mm-hmm. You know, wins beget wins. And
yeah. I forget who the military officer is. It's commander of the Marines. And he talks about you get up every day and you make the bed.
I love that. Yeah. You know? The admiral, right?
Yeah, he is. And I literally do. That's what I do. That's one of my things I do for my wife and for me. I get up and make the bed, but it's like, it's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And then you move on. You know?
Absolutely.
So anyway, well, that's great. There's so much to talk about, and I don't want to run out of time. I'm really going to push forward and talk about, I'm very grateful and humble that you accepted a challenge that I gave you, and that was to look critically at our branding, mm-hmm. NAHU, and to evaluate if it fits our role now, who we are today, as we take the hill, as we go out to meet with our clients, as we collaborate. So you've been very systematic in that approach, because some people, I just want to say, some people just say, oh, we need to change a name.
Right.
But they haven't really thought through, hey, do we? And if we do, what is it? What is it that we're doing? And
right.
You've been very strategic about that. And you've got a great team, too.
Well, thank you. Thank you for all of that. And yes, the task force has been, I mean, it's just been a great experience. And so much of the experience is because of the great team that we were able to pull together. To me, it's been an effort of passion. And it ties back to membership. It ties to the vice chair position that I'm doing in DEI. And all of that ties back to my absolute belief that this industry, that when we as an industry of professionals, when we collaborate and we work together, nobody makes a greater impact on the businesses that we serve than this group does. Because when we work together, you go to an employer. You know, when we do our job the way it needs to be done, we impact them strategically. We impact them financially. We impact them operationally. Because of our connection to their employees, we get to the very emotion of their business. And, you know, what we represent is this combined trusted advisor. To me, it's the most important advisor that a business owner has. Mm-hmm. And so coming back to your question of, you know, National Association of Health Underwriters, there's a couple key words in there that, in my opinion, don't embrace the complexity and the impact that we have as an industry, as an association. Underwriter is a term that, you know, I don't even have to describe, that we all understand how limiting that is in you know, our day-to-day activity. But even the health piece, as critically important as that is, and it's at the core of what we do, it goes so far beyond that health. I mean, we get into HR issues, we get into compliance, we get into technology, we get into communication strategies. Back to the membership, the DEI, the rebrand, I think there should be no association that the 20-somethings, the 30-somethings, the 40s and the 50-somethings want to be part of in this industry. But we have to stop, and we have to, not just the name that reflects it, but the brand behind it, mm-hmm. to be able to promote the impact that when you are part of this organization, as part of this association, when you work on any individual business in it, you get to embrace this entrepreneurial spirit. You're working for a bigger mission. You're making a difference in the lives of millions of Americans. And to me, that's where stepping back and saying, it's not just the name change. The name change really becomes an after effect of when you really appreciate the brand and the impact that we have as an association, as an industry, then you just need a name that reflects it. You know, the diversity, the equity, the inclusion piece of it, it's not just a racial, it's gender, it's age, it's, you know, there's so many things that go into the people that make up this association. And, you know, we're a welcoming group, and we just have to help people understand what we have to offer, because we know that what they have to offer in return, that we all strengthen as a result of it.
That's right. Every time we bring somebody new into the association, we've just strengthened the association. And we don't know. And I mean, Emma's a great example. I mean, my first vivid recollection of you when we were engaged was when I was elected secretary in Orlando.
Yeah.
And we really spent a few minutes, and wasn't even a ton of time, but the impact knowing you has had on me, all the ideas you brought to me, but really enthusiasm. I mean, honestly, we were kind of stuck in the old way of doing TPA work. and it was working, but there was a better way, and there was a need out there. And if you were willing to retool and step up to the challenge.
Or jump off.
That's right. And that's what we do. And that's why we call it the jump off, because right. I really have spent my life, you know, with somewhat of an abandon. It's like, you know, okay, there's a challenge. I'm just jumping off. I'm going to just do it. But that's the example. And I don't even want to guess how much older I am than you. But that's an example of where somebody new in the association impacted somebody that's been in this business and built my enthusiasm and gave me ideas I didn't have.
I always laugh at people saying, oh, the industry is going to die. The association is going to die. We can't attract the youngest millennials. We can't attract Gen Z. And they're like, come on, guys. And they say that because nobody wants anything to do with insurance. But you can stand in front of a, you know, doing a keynote, standing in front of 300 people and ask the room, how many of you grew up with the goal and the aspiration of getting into insurance?
Right.
And it's a small, small number of hands that go up. But we get in this industry and we find how special it is once we're on the inside. Got to be one of the most accidental industries. Well, let's quit having people get here on accident. Let's rebrand. Let's promote. Let's let them understand what a special place this is.
Right.
And special is an industry, but it comes back to there is no association that you could convince me of that makes a greater impact on this industry than what NAHU does, whatever our name will be at some point in the future. And that's what we have to get out there and promote. And I think the things that the youngest generations are looking for, we have it to offer in spades.
Sure.
They don't discover it until they stumble in and hear on the inside. Let's lead with that message.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate the point you made. And I think of Gen Z and millennials, they're wired to want to make a difference in somebody's life.
Yes.
And I mean, what better opportunity than the work we do?
There is none.
You know,
I will say, Kevin, that what I've most appreciated about getting to know you over the years has been that you are a lot like Eugene and I in a lot of ways. You jump off right into it. It needs to be broken. We're not afraid to break it and put it back together again. And you've done a lot of that, right? With rebranding, with the name changes. It made me laugh when Eugene said, I've tasked him with a small challenge. And I'm thinking, that's quite a challenge, like to rebrand an organization that has such credibility, such history, such notoriety, especially on the Hill. That's not a small project. But I think it's really courageous of you to say, let's look at this holistically, let's break it down and then build it back up. I've always very much appreciated that about you.
Well, thank you. That's flattering and humbling to hear you say that. And you know, the approach that we've taken with this is just what I described earlier. It's breaking it down. And you know, this isn't intended to be dismissive of our past, of our history. I mean, I love our history. It's celebrated, but this industry, it's evolved. It's a more complex industry today than we were when we were founded 90 years ago.
Right.
And it needs to reflect that. And I totally can appreciate the impact that we have on the Hill and the anxiety that some people might feel that, are we going to jeopardize that? And I don't want to be dismissive of that concern, but I just don't believe that our influence on the Hill has to do with the name that's on our letterhead.
I agree.
You know, I think that's insulting to everybody that has gone over the Hill, that has sat in those meetings, to the impact, the brand, the voice that Janet and her staff, and that, you know, we're here in D.C. to go over and meet with congresspeople. That's the influence.
Yes.
And to think that they can't move from one name to another, and I think it just gives us an even greater opportunity to explain our story, to explain our impact, and I think to even build that influence when they really understand what we're all about, what we're doing.
You know, I want to thank you, Kevin. I want to thank you for all the work that you've done. I want to thank you for your friendship, your commitment. It's these people that we keep coming back for, right? Because I know I'm not in it alone, and I've got all these people to help me. And with the energy we get out of our relationships, we go back encouraged, enthusiastic about helping our clients solve problems. So I really want to thank you for your time today. Emma, as always, my wing girl, wing lady, I don't know what that is. But Emma, I thank you because early on I said, I recognize that she could help me change, grow, and make a difference. And she's, like you, Kevin, has always said yes to whatever I've asked. And I'm very appreciative of that.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.